Welcome to the Just Raise podcast. I'm your host, Joe Sweeney. And today on the show, we are talking to Josh McManus, the founder and CEO of Fruitful, a new platform for financial advisors. Today, we dive into why Josh created Fruitful to pull his family out of what he calls the messy middle class, his obsession with human-centered product design, and why products need to be designed from the start, not simply developed, and how he aims to build a product so good that he won't ever have to spend a dollar on marketing. If Fruitful works, it will be the last fintech app you ever use. They aim to use financial advisors to put humans back in the center of finance, and in the process, turn all of your other fintech apps into tools to meet your financial plan. Josh just raised a $25 million Series A from 8VC, Lux Capital, Founders Fund, Elad Gil, and the founders of Brex and Gemini. This was one of the most fun conversations I had on the show, so I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Josh McManus, founder and CEO of Fruitful. Scaling a startup is hard, and for software companies, the core of that is software developers. Lemon.io exists to solve that problem. They connect you to your perfect developer in under 48 hours. To check it out, visit lemon.io.
The folks I know that have the best style, the buildings that I've been in that are the best designed, the meals that I've had that are best composed, they feel effortless and they are built on a heavy stack of obsession and intention.
I think an interesting place to start might be you talk about the intersection of the market imperative and the moral imperative when building a company. Can you talk a little bit about your thesis for building this company and why Fruitful needs to exist and fits that intersection?
So that intersection of moral imperative and market imperative in some ways is sort of my combined life thesis. I started out as a social entrepreneur working primarily in post-industrial cities. Started in Chattanooga, Tennessee, a city who had rolled steel come to it and then leave. And so it was pretty down and out in the 80s and 90s and is doing really well today. I took the learnings from there and went all around the Midwest. And so Cincinnati, Cleveland, Detroit, Akron, Dayton, all the places that people think about when they think about sort of post-industrial or flyover country. And what I learned was like that there is an issue where when things go in one direction or the other, when it's all just heart or it's all just head, that can lead to problematic outcomes. And so I started deeply studying the very foundation of how we do business and arrived at this thesis was that somewhere beyond for profit is for purpose, and that those are businesses that exist at the intersection of moral imperative and market imperative, and that there's a very different way that you build those businesses. And that's definitely what we're doing at Fruitful. In some ways, it's sort of the life thesis manifesting as a demonstration company.
So what is Fruitful?
So we believe Fruitful is the world's first financial wellness membership. Membership is so important because most of consumer finance today does not have customer-aligned business models. And what I like to say about consumer finance is, if you're not paying, then you know it's kind of like big tech. If you're not paying, you're the product. And so our membership, where we start with the Fruitful Financial Wellness membership is a $98 a month membership for folks to have a direct relationship with a certified financial planner. What that membership does is because you've monetized the relationship that way through that monthly membership fee, that financial planner is not obligated to do anything but serve you. They're not obligated to sell you anything, which most financial planners that you're dealing with are obligated to sell you something because they are either managing your money on a percent fee or they're giving you low to no cost advice and then they have to sell you something. So what we do at Fruitful is we shift it to that membership model and then we bring you sound financial guidance from industry professionals. It's been really fascinating because industry professionals have sort of flocked to us because they want to work in this type business model. So we've got the first five folks that have joined us from the CFP side are real pros, and they wanted to be somewhere where they can fully take care of that member. They wanted to be able to give them holistic, sound financial guidance. And this customer-aligned business model allows that to happen.
What were you doing in the Midwest before this? How did you get to starting this fintech company?
I got to Detroit, invited by some philanthropic entities just before the bankruptcy. And I worked on the bankruptcy. And over the course of helping philanthropy with the bankruptcy and supporting entrepreneurial ecosystems, we were growing entrepreneurial ecosystems in places that entrepreneur had sort of become a dead word, which was fascinating because like in 1920, Detroit was the most entrepreneurial place in the United States. And then, you know, in 2000, it was one of the least entrepreneurial places in the United States. But in working through that, I crossed paths with an entrepreneur named Dan Gilbert, who founded Quicken Loans, which is now called Rocket Mortgage. And he also was there when we founded StockX, and he owns the Cleveland Cavaliers, an incredibly prolific entrepreneur. And Dan and I developed this dialogue, and he ultimately asked me to come be his chief of staff. And I ended up being the chief operating officer for Rock Ventures, which is sort of the services company that ties all of his family companies together. So I got a bird's eye view of the future of fintech as we were doing, you know, push button, get mortgage. Now, we also got a front row view of winning the NBA National Championship and restoring downtown Detroit and a whole bunch of other things. I call that time my pragmatic PhD. But the big takeaway I had around fintech was I don't think you're going to design technology that takes humans out of the equation. I think you're going to design technology that makes humans more powerful in finance. And if you look at Rocket Mortgage, it's a combination of tens of thousands of people and incredible technology. It's not 10 people and incredible technology. It's tens of thousands of people and incredible technology. And I thought that that general spirit could be taken to the rest of the financial industry. And so when we set out to build Fruitful, we started looking at the other places that could benefit from that intersection of humans and high-touch technology, and financial guidance is where we're starting. Hopefully not where we've finished. We have much bigger ambitions, but guidance makes a lot of sense to start.
Yeah, I really want to hear about the ambitions for the company, but to dive into the model right now as you start, it sounds like it's $98 a month, but you get an on-demand financial planner who is not trying to sell you a Roth IRA backed by whoever he works for. He's not getting kickbacks from Vanguard for selling Vanguard products that may not be best for you. It's almost like the kind of internet virtual coach for X type of thing. Like there's a, like Headspace is a version of that for therapists and things like that. But that's what you're launching with.
Yeah, just like Headspace, Talkspace, you know, there's all this demand. One of the facts that we encountered recently is that 59% of Americans want financial advice but aren't sure where to turn. And so there's just a supply and demand issue of folks that are needing financial advice, and they need it even more in the last couple of weeks, you know, when crypto starts to do whatever it's doing, and when the Dow starts to do whatever it's doing, those are the times when people need this advice even more. And so that's what that Fruitful membership gets you, $98 a month. And interestingly, if you look at the rest of the industry, like there's typically three ways that you can pay for this. You can pay for it by the hour at an average of around $250 an hour. You can get a financial plan, which those tend to be about $2,500 for a holistic financial plan. Or you can pay an assets under management fee, and that's typically 1% on $250,000 minimum. So no matter which way you cut it up, you're going to spend about $2,500 a year on this sort of service. And so we've used the technology and this incredible team to bring the cost of that down, and therefore we hope bring accessibility up to more folks who need this kind of service.
So you just raised $25 million Series A. Congratulations, by the way. From 8VC, Lux Capital, Founders Fund, Elad Gil, some really fantastic VCs, which I guess brings me to the question, you mentioned your ambition earlier. What do you want Fruitful to become?
I'm very frustrated with two things. One is I'm frustrated with multiple generations of my family being stuck in the messy middle, which is like always doing okay enough, but never climbing to a place of safety where you can tell the generation behind you that they're going to be okay. And I've got an 8-year-old right now. And I look at, like, I've seen this happen. I know the tale of my great-grandfather. I knew my grandfather well. He was my North Star in this world. You know, my dad is still around. We have a great relationship. But generation after generation, we've been perpetually sort of that delicate middle class, which still wonders, you know, what you do from paycheck to paycheck. And so that's a part of the ambition of Fruitful. And the other part of the ambition of Fruitful is I don't want an infinite number of fin and fintech apps, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of my days trying to deal with my personal finances. And so I say people don't want a bank. They just want to be. I want to be a good dad. I want to be able to hike the Appalachian Trail. I want to be a collector of NFTs, like whatever it is. But what I don't long to do is sit in the fintech folder of my smartphone and have to balance a whole bunch of new products and services. And so the long-term vision for Fruitful, our two-year roadmap, is to take these things that are most critical to you. So first is sound financial guidance. And that has an implicit high level of customer service with it. So like when you have a problem, you can get help because you know real people at your financial services company. The second thing is to add a holistic view of your financial life, because there's a lot of incentives across fin and fintech to not show you your whole financial life. We know when you can see your whole financial life, you make better decisions and you make more holistic decisions and you make compounding decisions that benefit you and future generations of your family. And then the third thing is to eventually be able to integrate your banking capacity in with that same platform. Because if I had my guidance, my service, my insights, and my banking all on one platform, that means I could talk to my guide who says, you had extra cash last month. That cash should be put into one of the guides the other day was telling me about iTreasury bonds, which is an anti-inflationary position for cash. And so if we achieve our long-term vision, you wouldn't have to go to your guidance platform, talk to your guide, then go to the iTreasury site, then go to your personal banking site, maybe go to your insights platform, check on what your total balances are, then come back to your banking platform again and transfer to your iTreasury account. That's so many steps and the friction therein. I mean, I equate it to like what the world was like before Airbnb. You know, I could still go to Thailand, but I had to find the house. I had to make the economic transaction with somebody. I had to take the risk. I had to self-insure. And so not as many people did it. Once Airbnb was there, the friction decreased and more people were able to go visit Thailand and have that full experience. So we believe that a full financial home is what the long-term proposition is that will make people's lives better. And so that's what we're trying to build towards.
So you're going to own the customer relationship.
That's what we believe. I mean, that's the thing that's so disappointing to me in all of my fin and fintech relationships is they're not relationships. Mm. They're transactions. So we believe that if we do the really, really hard work of customer service, that will then give us the privilege to work with people on the rest of their financial life.
Yeah. And that is a hugely powerful position to be in, because once you own the customer relationship, everything on the back end is pretty much a commodity, whether it's which stockbroking app or stockbroker you use doesn't really matter. It's more about the customer relationship on the front end. It's their money and you can then treat everything else as, yeah, super interesting.
I think a lot of that is a race to the bottom right now. People are trying to cost compete with each other and feature compete with each other, but they're not truly listening to the humans who are saying, I want to be served. I want to have trust. I want to feel safe, and I want to have a real relationship. There's an assumption across a lot of fin and fintech right now that money is not emotional. And I think that's a huge fallacy.
And just an assumption that people want to manage their own money, which they do in a sense, but at some point you also want to have savings to understand what your financial life looks like. It's amazing. I have probably a dozen different apps that hold my money from, you know, like my Chase bank account to, I think SoFi has some, Vanguard, two different retirement accounts, Coinbase, OpenSea, it just keeps going.
You're your own banker, Joe.
And then on top of that, I have an app that aggregates it, but it doesn't do it well. How do you bring that human element to software design?
I like to say that we're a design company equipped by technology to build a better business beyond banking. I certainly have a tremendous amount of respect for the design side of Apple, because I think that they always endeavored to solve the human problem and then to solve the technical problem. And so the way we've done it in practice here is we have equally invested in design and technology from day one. And that's evidenced through our brand partnership. I reached out early on, as soon as we had seed funding secured, I reached out to a guy named Michael Beirut, who's a sort of legendary graphic designer who's touched brands like MasterCard, and said, you know, I know, you know, you usually work on really big things. This is a really small thing that we believe will be very big. And would you work on it with us? And he graciously has. So the brand, and even a name like Fruitful, projects a different brand proposition and a customer handshake and relationship that's going to be different by design.
When I talk to founders, recruiting comes in as the number one or number two most important thing that they're doing every single time. Lemon solves for that and gives you back critical executive time to focus on product, sales, every other part of the business, while Lemon places killer developers in your company in less than 48 hours. If you want to check it out, fans of Just Raise can get 15% off for the first 4 weeks worth of work at lemon.io. I think that design piece is fascinating, and the way you're intentional about it, I think, goes a long way. How do you integrate both the financial advisors and the software? Because it's amazing. Your website is one of the best designed consumer websites I've seen in a while. So you clearly pay a lot of attention to design and are very intentional about that.
We have an incredible design team. Those folks have worked at places like Frog and Doberman. They've worked in the best design firms in the world. And they bring a level of intentionality to the work to where I like to say that they seek the simplicity that exists beyond complexity. And, you know, to give another reference back to Apple, I think that's what they've long done. And so when you open something, you're like, man, that seems very, very simple. But the acts that it took to get there were incredibly complex. And so I watch our design team work and I'm quite humbled by it. The service design team, the folks that are designing the screens, the features, because they don't just ideate something that is in the best interest of the customer. They then go out into the world and then watch people use it and repeatedly come back and iterate on top of that. And what I've noted over the course of this journey so far is there's a big difference between things that are developed and things that are designed. Things that are developed solve the technical problem. And so you've probably got a bunch of these apps on your phone. I do. That technically solve the issue that they set out to solve. But the user experience, or what we call the member experience, is really subpar because it was created by a bunch of engineers. And engineers are like, well, if it does the thing that you wanted it to do, that's all you should need in this world. And so something that's been designed both does what you need it to do in this world, but also has smooth edges and has a intuitive consumer process that allows for you to feel really good about what happens, for you to not need an instruction booklet for it to happen, for it to be, you know, just very, very enjoyable. And almost like, you know, I watched my 8-year-old play with his iPad. Like, I never had to tell him how any of it worked. It just like came to him by design. And that's the same way we're trying to work here at Fruitful.
If I was to come away with one thing about design for how to build these types of beautiful products like you're building at Fruitful, what advice would you give me?
First and foremost is become humanity-centered. And so like I grew up a little bit around HCD, human-centered design. You know, that's the act of going in and watching the person use whatever you've created. And there's never a stupid human problem, which I've heard a lot of engineers talk about over time. It's just like, oh, that, you know, this would have worked fine if it wasn't for the stupid human. And I tell our team all the time, there are no stupid humans. But one step beyond human-centered design is humanity-centered design, which humanity-centered design says, okay, I'm going to be radically focused on that one user, but I'm also going to understand that they exist in the broader sense of humanity. And so I need to make sure too that not only does this give them an elegant experience, but it's also in their best interest. And so that business model is where humanity-centered design comes in. I passed a bus this morning on my walk into work, and it was a big bank bragging about how much time their customers were spending in their app. And they were really proud of that. And I'm like, oh, you're really proud of that because the way you monetize is you sell them stuff the more time their eyeballs are in your app. And I'm like, those are really perverse incentives. And we wouldn't design that way in our company because we're engaged in humanity-centered design. And so, you know, it starts with that strong user perspective. Then you have to get pros. Like you just, like, I've seen way too many companies say like, we'll build, and then we'll slap a little design on it at the end. You have to invest heavily in design from the get-go. And so I look at our design costs as part of our technical build costs. Like if it's not well designed, then it's not well delivered. So I don't look at that as superfluous. I look at it as a have to have. And then the third thing relative to design is things that we really love in this world, every piece of it's been considered. Effortlessness is about intentionality and consideration. So the folks I know that have the best style, the buildings that I've been in that are the best designed, the meals that I've had that are best composed, they feel effortless. And they are built on a heavy stack of obsession and intention.
Yeah, that is really, really interesting. You have to go really deep to make something feel really simple.
Yeah, that's the one takeaway.
So if I'm a customer coming into Fruitful, and I hope to check this out as soon as you launch, you're launching in the fall?
October 3rd.
October 3rd. October 3rd. All right. I will have it bookmarked to download. One aspect of fintechs and neobanks and things like that, that I think you'll run into in a way that other fintechs have as well, is that it's hard to bring on customers. You don't have the natural network effects of, you know, a Zoom or a social network or a communications or a collaborations tool. You have to get people to purposefully go and put money in an account or sign up for a subscription. How do you think about distribution?
In looking at the landscape of products and services in the world, the one thing that we're really clear on is those that actually meaningfully, positively impact people's lives will propagate organically. And so what we talk about the most right now, you know, most companies are of course talking about like, how do we get people in the funnel and how many, you know, what's the retention going to be and CAC cost. And we do all of that like any responsible company should. But the thing we talk about more than that is if what we deliver is insanely great, then that will shift the narrative from this is something that you could have that might be nice to have to something you have to have. The most important thing that happens for me is like once you come in as a customer, Joe, if it really starts working for you and you mention it at brunch, that's what will drive this business. And I remember distinctly being in New York City years and years and years ago and somebody saying, you just rode here in a cab? Why are you doing that when Lyft is around? And I'm like, what is Lyft? And they're like, oh, you gotta get this. And you know, at that time it was like in only certain markets and it was a completely foreign concept. But why did I get it? It wasn't because, you know, some organic ad had been pushed at me in a social forum. It was because somebody I trusted looked at me and said, dude, you're not doing it right. So of course we're going to have to optimize. We're going to have to be in all the places with all the channels and all the things that FinTech has to do. But what I'm going to continue to wake up worrying about every day is it insanely good? Is it a very good value for the money that you're investing in it? And will you start telling your friends and family about it? Because if I can crack that nut, the rest of it can be worked through, the affordable CAC cost, the introduction of it to people. I also hope to do a lot of this. You know, I hope to be out talking to folks about it and unpacking it and really helping them explain it. Sound financial planning is not something that a 20-second commercial takes care of properly. It's a conversation and it's a lifetime of better decisions that yield an outcome that takes you out of the messy middle. So that's why we're going to do anything and everything we can to have these conversations, you know, from human being to human being.
The last thing we do on the show always is a lightning round. And the first question we ask is, what's top of mind for you right now? What has to go right over the next 3 months or 6 months up until launch for Fruitful to really take off?
Top of mind is two things: loving our customers, loving our members, and loving our team. So if we start taking care of, and we already have folks in beta, take care of them and take care of our team during these very weird times, turbulent times, then I think we'll be okay.
If you were starting over from scratch, what would you do differently?
I would try to get to the member faster. The sooner that you can be engaged with the member, building a relationship and learning from them, I don't know, 70, 80 people that we have in beta right now, we started that at probably 5 months in and we should have started it at 1 month in.
You launch your beta 5 months in and you would rather have just had customers talking to them about something 30 days in?
Yeah. You just learn so much from meeting people where they are.
What have you learned?
We've learned that they like the extended discussions more than they like the chat. We thought it would be like, you know, chat would be lit up all the time. And they like the long form discussions. They like to see a real human being. So we wondered if they wanted to like, do they want to asynchronously chat? Do they want to phone call? But it turns out they want to do this. They want to see facial expressions and know that there's a real human being totally tuned into them on the other side. We've learned that people need this bad. Like the like anecdotal stories already of like, you know, people breaking down in tears and this being a heavily emotional thing and them having made decisions that they weren't comfortable with. And they just feel seen. They feel heard. They feel like they've got a friend that they can depend on in this world. That's been incredible. We hear from people that they don't know everything there is to know. And so we're going to have to continually show them this roadmap or blueprint of what else they should be thinking about. They sort of have admitted, we don't know what we don't know. You know, this is one of those things like people are scared of public speaking. I think they're even more scared of public analysis of their bank account. And so people have a lot of fear around this. And so they want to be led. They want to be taught. And we're working through how we become as proactively instructive as we can.
How do you design for education in a way that doesn't, for lack of a better word, piss people off when you try to teach them about things?
I think instead of education, we talk about demystification a lot, because this industry is totally taken with acronyms, insider terminology, high-minded concepts, and unnecessary complexity. And so instead of talking down to our members, we talk across to them to say, hey, here's how you demystify this particular concept. It's not really as hard as it's been made out to be, and this is what you actually need to know about it. So I think about it as we're their best friend in finance, and because of the relationship we have through membership, you can actually trust that friend.
Beyond Fruitful, since you've been building in this space for a long time, what's one company that you're really interested in that you think everyone will be talking about in 12 to 18 months?
The funny thing is, everything that comes to my mind of what people are going to be talking about are things that they're going to have been let down by, because I think that there are a lot of companies that are just, when I say we work at intersection of moral mission and market mission, there's a lot of folks just working at the intersection of market mission right now. What I'm interested in general, and I won't call a company in particular, but if you look at what tokenization, blockchain, Web3 concepts in general can do to align business models in service to customers, I think that the bulk of the FANG and the Fortune 500 are ripe for disruption. The big five banks have not been particularly bothered in the last 100 years. I think they will be very bothered in the next 100 years, because these technologies are going to allow companies to build business models that better serve people. And it doesn't matter how strong your inertia is or your ability to use regulatory barriers to your advantage. I think that the whole world can be turned upside down by these forces.
When you started talking about tokens, I thought that you were going to say people would be let down by crypto, as you'll see more blowups as you've seen, which will probably happen. But it's amazing. I talk to founders all the time, and the difference between founders who are talking about the technology behind it, the incentives for new business models, incentive design, that kind of thing, is so drastically different than the kind of mainstream trading crypto is dead kind of vibe.
I've been joking about wanting to get a crypto bear t-shirt. The actual buying and selling of those as currencies is not something I've personally engaged in at all. maybe to my detriment, I don't know. And so I'm very intentional to say tokenization, blockchain, and the other technologies that are broadly defined as Web3, those are really exciting to me. And if you look at old line banking, there's something that tokenization replaces in old line banking. There's something that blockchain replaces in old line banking. And so I'm really excited about that. Cryptocurrencies, I think that that's a lot like a casino right now, as judged by the performance of how erratic they've been.
Yeah, that's what it feels like for me. I have participated, and casino is probably the right metaphor. My last question for everybody on the show is about vision. Where would you like to see Fruitful in 10 years?
I'd like for Fruitful to be on a path to being the demonstration company for purpose, working at that intersection of moral imperative and market imperative. I'd like for it to be on a path to serving as many Americans as possible. So I'd like to see us in the millions of members. I'd like for us to have taken on the design capabilities of Apple and the social capacities of Patagonia and merge those together into a company like the world has never seen before. And I'd like for us to do that in service to our members, but also to raise the bar on what's expected of how a company can conduct itself and how capitalism can be conducted overall.
It's a big vision, but it's a really cool one. Josh, thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for the questions. They were great, Joe.